He came to America for religious asylum and to warn the church about coming persecution. Instead, he ended up in an American jail for a year.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, what you're about to hear today on the broadcast will shock you, will dismay you, you'll wonder, is there more to the story? Well, the more to the story is there's a spiritual battle going on, and you're going to hear about it firsthand. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast. I will not be taking calls today. This is a watershed interview with a man of God who has spent a year plus in an American prison. He is now out of jail now. He's in a foreign country, and you're going to hear his story firsthand today. I'm speaking about Torben Søndergaard, founder of The Last Reformation. Here he is, a Christian in Denmark, and has kind of a rediscovery of New Testament Christianity and starts living it out. And a movement is birthed that's gone around the world. And he faced such severe opposition in Denmark that he came to America for religious asylum. Torben, so glad to have you with us. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's so good to be out. It's good to be here.
Amazing. All right, so listen, there's so much we want to talk about. We want to talk about a message that you had for the American church about coming persecution before you were put in jail. We want to talk about what the Lord did in your life in jail. But first, let's recount the journey. Now, I know there are legal cases, asylum cases, different things going on. We can't talk about everything, but whatever we can talk about, we're going to talk about. Give us just a very brief picture of what was happening in Denmark and why you came to America for religious asylum.
Yeah, I've been doing ministry in Denmark and all over the world for many years. And like everyone else, I've experienced opposition, people on YouTube telling lies. And I think every ministry have experienced that. But what happened was that back in 2017-18, Danish TV started to follow me and do a documentary about me. Or I thought it was about me. And I've been doing TV before, and I've never had like any issues like that. And I want to say I was proud of being Danish. I had my Danish passport, the best passport in the world, I felt like. So I was free to travel and do a lot of things. But when they followed me and started to show the programs, it was very, very different than what I've been told. They put me in box with some other ministries who had gone really wrong and mixed it all together. And I saw not only my name was really put in a very bad light, not only I was accused for many things I haven't done. For example, there was a Danish pastor who have had some issues and have been in jail for sexual misuse of minors. And they put him together in the show with me and mixed it all together in a way that I was only accused of it almost. Like people sent me threats mail, you have to go to jail again. I'm like, no, I have not been in jail. That was that guy. So it was a lot of mix, but there was an agenda behind it. And that was the most scary thing. I was supposed to be on national TV three times during January 2019, but I actually ended up being on national TV 17 times during January. Because the day before the program, they talked about it. When the program aired, they talked about it. I was in the news the same evening and the day after. And it was all agenda to put me and Christians in very, very bad light. And the program was actually called God's Best Children. And it was a way to just say, is this the best God has?
Wow.
And then it was mixed and manipulated. There was a lot of focus on deliverance, and they never showed the joy from a deliverance. They never showed the like excitement, like, yay, somebody got set free. They only showed the manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
And then they changed the sound to make it even more scary. And then they put pictures of kids in that very often was not in the same room, and somehow say, look, those kids are being traumatized because of what they're watching. And one of the child they used a lot, even in the trailer, was a young boy, I don't know how old, 18 years old, who was standing with his trousers down and in only underwear. And they said, look, he have been traumatized, so he had peed in his pants.
Huh.
And it was what the story was about. Like, look at kids, look at this young boy, he was traumatized. He was so afraid of what he saw that he had been peeing in his pants, and we need laws to deal with that. And the story behind that boy was he did not pee in his pants. He was a young boy who had autism, and there was Baptist going on at that time. And he saw the pool, and he took his clothes off because he wanted to swim with the other people who was being baptized. And the mom said no, and he started to cry, and TV recorded it, and it became a big story in Denmark.
Unreal.
Yeah. And the prosecution was just so weird and so hard, so I actually ended up leaving. I got a phone call where I really understood this is not going to stop.
And was there even pressure on your family or one of your children?
Yeah. There was the government started to come and talk, wanted to talk with my girls. And we are doing homeschooling, and homeschooling is not a common thing in Denmark at all.
Yeah.
So at that time, there was only 400 kids in the whole country. But it was good for us because we were traveling a lot. And that was also weird. First, they came. The way it happened was, nothing makes sense. For example, we had a training school. And in the training school, we took at one time, we went on a man trip. We took all the men, all the boys. We walked 10 miles, we slept outside, we have a guitar with us, we are worshiping God. And we also ate some food. And the food we ate was chickens we had with us. And we killed the chicken and we ate the food, and it was a man trip. And after we did that, a few days later, the government came and knocked the door and said they want to talk with my girls. And I said, why? And I said, because you are on a man trip and you slaughter some chicken. And I was like, but it's not illegal to slaughter chicken. This is how we get our food. like there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, but we still need to talk with your girls. But it was a man trip. My girls was not on the trip. No, but we still need to talk with your girls.
Amazing.
And it was like that. It was like that. And then they talked with them. And then as soon as they went out, it was like, no, we need to come back and talk. We think your daughter have an eating disorder. And like, nothing makes sense. It was just like they tried to find something. And with all the TV in the programs with me, just after every program, we saw the politicians seeing clips, taking out of context, and say, we need the police to investigate this guy. We need laws, we need rule laws that can deal with those things. And in the mindset of the Danish people, I was already guilty. That was how I felt it. I felt like,
yeah,
there's agenda here, and they want to get rid of me. So we left for America.
And when you came to America, though, Torben, and we've got 2 minutes before our first break, on the one hand, you came for religious asylum, but did you also feel, and again, we'll pick this up more, but did you also feel that you had a warning for the church in America?
Yeah, I can say that short. Again, I was in shock. How could this happen? And on the way to America, I felt very strong. God said to me that what you experience is coming to America, but my people are not ready for it. And I've called you to America to help to make my people ready for what is coming.
All right. So a sense of the attack you came under. And folks, you understand, even though Denmark, the vast majority of the people are members of the state church. So church and state very much joined together in that regard. The vast majority of the people joined to the state church, only a very, very small percentage would be evangelical believing Christians, and then a very, very small percentage of that would be Pentecostal and charismatic. So everything that Torben was doing was very much rocking the boat. And Torben, you had been to America before. Did you ever have any problems being in the country here and ministering freely?
No, not at all. Everything have always been good. But you know, when I came to America, different things happened. I actually didn't want to seek asylum in the beginning because I hoped it would go away in Denmark. But a law was passed, a mental violence law, and they just, many things happened. And I just knew that this is not going to stop here. So we sought asylum and sent in the papers, and we thought everything was good. We are in America. but America is changing. America is changing. And we saw that we came in 2019. And short after we came, we got a training school, and it was at the same time we had the whole COVID thing. And after that, there was the election. And because of what I already gone through in Denmark, I recognized that spirit. Like right away when I saw the American news, I haven't seen a lot of American news before I came here. And when I saw the election, I just like, this is the same spirit. This is this Antichrist spirit. This is exactly what I experienced in Denmark. And I really saw through it all right away because it was like I've just gone through it. Uh-huh. And I recognized the same spirit in America on a much bigger level, because now it's not small Denmark. Now we're talking about America.
Yeah. All right, friends, we will be right back. Because here, Torben and his family come to America to seek religious asylum. You heard what happened in Denmark, the crazy accusations. What you're about to hear, you're going to say, there's more to... Friends, what you're about to hear, every word of it is true. I was involved in a court case. I've spoken with the lawyers. You'll be shocked by what you hear happened in America.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Tribeta Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss for some foolish reason a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, friends. We are on the front lines for such a time as this. We have been sounding the alarm for many years for such a time as this. As God is pouring out his spirit, as resistance keeps rising, the church must rise up, not in a carnal way, not fighting with fleshly, earthly weapons, but in the power and life of the spirit with grace and truth together. This is the moment, and the opposition is heating up, because God is moving more and more. My guest, Torben Sundergaard, founder of The Last Reformation, now in Europe, once he was released from prison in America. So he's here in America. He puts in paperwork to make a plea for religious asylum because he and his family do feel that they would be threatened there in Denmark, that there could be real legal persecution and social harassment and things like that. Next thing I hear, did you hear? And Torben and I got to know each other. He came to our offices here in North Carolina. We spent a couple hours together. We prayed together. I remember getting on our knees and crying out to God together. Grads from our ministry school have worked with Torben in his ministry. And so I saw his heart, his passion for the things of God, and his willingness to just obey, and the favor that was on him. Next thing I hear, he's in prison. He's in prison in America. All right, so Torben, again, we could talk for hours. There's so much that happened, but let's give the terrible highlights of what happens when you are called in by the government. You can give whatever details you're allowed to give, right? You're called in.
Yeah.
What? How? Why did they put you in jail?
Yeah. It's so crazy. First, when you seek asylum in America, it can normally take 2, 3, 4, 5 years, actually, and then you are being called into a asylum interview. But nothing was normal here. After a little more than 3 years, I got a letter from Homeland Security in Orlando. I came from Orlando, but we lived in California now. And they wanted to see me at a meeting. And first I thought, yay, this is the asylum interview. Now we can finally get the asylum and get our papers.
Uh-huh.
But when my lawyer saw that letter, she said, what is this? Like, there's red flags, there's something off.
Mm.
And she noticed that the email was actually sent from my FBI task force. And she was like, Tom, I don't think you should go. There's something off, or something like that. And I was like, I've done nothing wrong. Like, everything is good. So I actually jumped in a plane and flew to Orlando, and I went to that meeting. And I came in, and they showed me, I think, FBI's badge. And then two people took me in at the office. And the papers just said they want to talk to me about my asylum case. There was no information about it. And then they start to talk, and he started to ask a lot of questions about, like, my money, where I get my money from. And I told I get salary, and I pay tax, and everything is in order. And he asked me a lot of questions, and it was a little weird. And then he said, yes, we have been told that you are smuggling weapons from Mexico to America.
I mean, it's hard not to burst out. I mean, I heard that Torben's in jail for smuggling weapons from America. It's like, what? What in the world are you talking? I mean, who would even think of coming up with that? So this really happened. This really happened.
I live in California, in San Diego now, and we had a Bible school in Mexico. So we, of course, have people going in and out because we have Bible school in America and in Mexico. But when they told me that, to be honest, my first thought was, I was relieved almost. Like, is that the lie now? Because in Denmark also, I was accused of so many crazy things, but I thought this is too crazy. Like, this is so insane. So no one will believe it.
So I thought
I was okay. And then he said, but therefore you're not going home today. And I'm like, what? Up the door, visited me, handcuffs on, took me into a holding cell. Checked me that night. I was put in Orange County Jail. And I said that was the first real shock when they took me there, because I was like, I've never been handcuffed before. Like, handcuffs around my hands, and then a chain around my hip, and the handcuffs was there, chains around my legs, and the shoelaces taken off, so I could not use them as a weapon. And there I was dragged away, and it's very difficult to walk with open shoes and without shoelaces, mm-hmm. and then handcuffs and foot chains. And one night in Orange County Jail, and that was scary. That was really a new world for me. And then I went back to Homeland Security office, and then the day after they took me to ICE Immigration Center. And there was two options. There was Miami or Bakersfield near Jacksonville, Baker County, sorry. And they took me to County, and I have no idea what to imagine. I thought, okay, detention center is not like a real jail, it's maybe better, but this was bad. Like, I was taken there and nothing was told me, like nothing makes sense. And I came into a very old, wear out jail, and the first thing that was put me in isolation. And I was put into a cell. I don't know if people can see, but 8 times 13 feet. And there's a picture. This is like my cell. I was put in with bunk beds on one side, and then a shower, and then a toilet. Mm. Leftover underwear, garbage, mold on the ceiling. And there I was, and the door was locked behind me. And I would say that was the first time I really broke. I cried. I was like, what is happening? Like, what is happening here? And very short, it was 10 days there. Then I would put in another dorm with murders and people. And one cellmate, he have killed like a homeless guy. Another guy have stabbed somebody in the knife. There's people who have been in jail for 20, 25 years there. And I was put there. First time I came in, it was almost started a fight because I wanted to call my wife. And then I found out people start to shout and yell, and the whole dorm went crazy. Like, what is happening? Because I was using the black phone. And I was not, okay, sorry, I did not know it was a black phone. No, you're not allowed to use the black phone. And the other phone was for the Hispanic people. So there was two phones, one for the black and one for the Spanish people. And there I stood as a white guy and like have no idea what happened. And after a month there, I was then put in another cell for a year. So it was 412 days all in all. And it was actually really when I came out, I understood why I was in. I never really understood it while I was in, because The papers I got make no sense. It started with human. I started with weapon smuggling. Then it became human trafficking. Then I was put up at economic fraud. Then there was no option for bond. Like other people came in, they came out on a bond. I could not come out on a bond because I was a security risk, because I was a national threat. So somehow I was put in a total different category with everyone else. I saw people coming in and get a bond and going out for things they've done wrong, but I was a security risk, a national threat with no really option of bond.
Extraordinary.
Because of, yeah.
You know,
it was a journey.
Friends, Acts 24, accusations are brought against Paul, and he's accused of being a pestilence. And remember, the believers in different cities are accused with turning the world upside down. Here, these crazy false charges against Torben. And again, I'm interacting with attorneys and find out what's, and why is he still in jail? 412 days here on American soil. Much more to come. Stay right here. Hey, friends. Dr. Michael Brown here. Do you remember when people thought I was crazy when I said it's not too late for America, that God can still do something in our country, that there is going to be a pushback, a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution? And do you remember when people thought that you were crazy because you felt the same way, because you believed what I was saying and already felt it in your heart? Well, friends, that pushback is here. The gospel-based moral and cultural revolution we've been talking about for 25 years is unfolding, and we are right in the thick of it. And the Line of Fire broadcast is divinely positioned for such a time as this. Friends, you would be so gratified and blessed as I hear, if you could hear what I hear, testimony after testimony as leaders, young people, old people, moms, dads, students, people from all backgrounds come up to me and say, Dr. Brown, you're providing a template for us. You're providing a blueprint for us. You're showing us how to do this, how to have hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. But friends, it's a joint effort. We do this together, and with your support, we can amplify this broadcast around the nation and amplify this voice to shake the nation. Join our support team today. Become a torchbearer with a dollar or more per day. Here's the number to call to sign up, 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275, or go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. and become a monthly supporter. Click on Donate Monthly Support. I want to immediately give you two classic books, Compassionate Father or Consuming Fire, Who is the God of the Old Testament, and Revolution, which will really show you what it means to be a Jesus follower today. Plus, you get free access to our online classes and so much more. Sign up today, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we're on the front lines together. I want to encourage you to join our support team. A dollar or more per day makes you a torchbearer. You literally hold our arms up on the front lines, but not just that. We are equipping together. You are joining with us as we equip God's army in America and around the world. Again, we don't fight the way the world fights. We fight with spiritual weapons. We overcome evil with good. We overcome hatred with love. We overcome lies with truth. But be assured there will be opposition. Be assured that if we are dangerous to the kingdom of darkness, there will be pushback. And in the days ahead, we will be deleting all kinds of lies and false accusations against Torben right on our YouTube channel. And friends, I testified on his behalf in court. We talked about the spiritual climate in Denmark, talked about some real religious opposition, laws, different things like that. I painted a larger picture of what's happening in Scandinavian countries, etc. And I see the courtroom, and there's Torben in his orange jumpsuit and chains. I mean, this is This is not, we're not just talking theory here or you know, stories. This is reality, what he lived through. So, Torben, here's what I want to do for the rest of the broadcast. I want to take this segment and talk about what was happening, why the opposition, and then I want to take the last segment to talk about what the Lord did in your life in prison. And remember, sometimes you're in complete isolation, then with these dangerous, violent inmates, and then with mainly Spanish speakers. And so it's you're alone a lot of times. So we'll come to that. But so what did you learn? What was actually happening? Why did this attack come? Spiritually, we understand, but what else was going on?
I would say it was very difficult for me to get information in the beginning. I knew nothing makes sense of the papers I got, and I fear God. Like, I have a high fear of God, and I've been trying to live in the light, really, and done everything correct. So I knew there was like nothing wrong in that sense. I got a paper after maybe 10 months from one of the lawyers, and it was actually a paper. I sit with it here in my hand, and I needed to read this many times, and it really make a little more sense. It was about actually an investigation we acquired for the ICE officer who detained me, the guy who arrested me in the beginning. Because one of the things that's written on this paper was that we now got a witness statement who support that in September of 2022, that is actually, I got detained in July. So that is 3 months or 2.5 months after I got detained. This officer, he contacted a civilian on the outside and said to him that they should go to Homeland Security and falsely accuse me of human trafficking. So the whole human trafficking thing that suddenly was on my records, on my papers, according to this witness we have, who under oath have testified, it came from that officer who detained me. So try to imagine this. I got detained by an officer, and 2 months after I was detained, he tried to start a criminal investigation against me by falsely accuse me of human trafficking. Mm. And that also did that people who tried to help me, we know there was some senator, other people who tried to come into the case in the beginning, they saw my records, my file, and everyone who saw, hey, he's being investigated by FBI for human trafficking, what do people do? Hands up. We don't know this guy. We don't want to touch it. Mm. And it was scary to understand that those people who actually put me in jail was actually behind most of the lies. And on this paper, there's so many things he did that is just that show he had a personal agenda to get rid of me. And what we know, we found out later, is that he was connected with accusers from Denmark. So I actually fled Denmark to come away from this. And one of the guys who was behind some of the lies in Denmark, he actually sent me an email when I came to America, and he said, finally, you will come to America, so now I can destroy you and I will get you to jail because I have contacts in Washington. And I got that email. And, you know, I didn't put more into it because, you know, people can bring lies, but that was the main reason.
Yeah.
That the accusers from Denmark, people who was part of government and worked with different things in Europe, had a hand in all of this. And that was scary. And I want to say it was very intimidating to be in there because my treatment was different. For example, my officer who came to my ICE officer inside the jail, when he came with paper, he wanted me to sign papers. And it was like, I said again, I need my lawyer to look at it first. And he got irritated every time. And one time I said, have you sent it to my lawyer? And one time he said, no, I've been told I'm not allowed to talk to your lawyer. So he had been dictated from higher up that he was not allowed to speak to my lawyer. And one of the most scary moments was actually 2 weeks before I got detained, it got set free. I was called in to a room with two ICE officers, where one recorded on a video. I was put on a chair and I was given papers. And it was papers, if I don't give them everything they provide. And there was a lot of things I did not understand, like with numbers and things. If I don't do this and this and this, I can be federal prosecutor and I can go to jail up to 10 years. And he gave me that paper and he was irritated and he wanted me to sign. And I've been told, don't sign anything before I talk to my lawyer. And I said, hey, I cannot sign. I need to talk to my lawyer. And he was angry. You need to sign. And said, I have a lawyer call in 2 hours. Give me 3 hours. Just be back in 3 hours. I have a lawyer call in 2 hours. It's not on your timeline. It's not on your timeline. It's over our timeline. You need to sign right now. And I couldn't sign it. And then he said, so you are going to remain here and we are going to federal prosecute you. And I was like, what is going on here? And then he lied to my face and said that I've said something to my lawyer I haven't said. And there was the people who had me in there. And I have episode of the other people in my dorm who came to me like, what is going on, Tom? And I actually ended up being the dorm as long as anyone else. Like I was moved to another dorm with mainly people from Mexico and Honduras and so on. And most people was only there 3-4 months, but I was there like 13 months. So I was there longer than anyone else. And it was scary. And I would say the greatest gift I got was on my second birthday in jail, where we actually gave out a video with Chairman Clay Higgins from Louisiana, who actually stood up in the government, in the parliament, what is called in America, in the Congress in America, and said that we believe that Tom is being persecuted by this administration because he's an immigrant Christian. And finally, I was like, finally, somebody stand up and put words on it. Because I think the hardest in the beginning is that I heard a saying was, no one is in jail unless they've done something wrong. And I had like, most people thought, okay, Tom, he's not doing human trafficking. That is too insane. And weapons smuggling, that is too much. But he must have done something wrong because no one, I've heard that so many times, No one is in jail innocent. And when I hear people come with a statement like no one, I can come with one person. Let's talk about Christ. I can come with many others. Let's talk about Peter, Porter, James. Let's talk about the early disciples. Let's talk about the early believers. Let's talk about Christians all over the world.
Yes.
Like there is thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who is in jail because of their faith.
Yes.
But we are not used to it in America. We are not used to this level of persecution in the West. And it go back to the beginning. God sent me to America also saying, make my people ready because America is not ready for what is coming. And I became like symbol of that.
Right. Yeah. God said, okay, here's how we get the message out more loudly than your words. You're going to experience it and live it out. And listen, friends, I am privy to documents that the lawyers have. I'm privy to information. I've been sent copies of things. There are ongoing cases going on. There is an anti-defamation case going on right now where Torben has been defamed by someone and said, I'm talking about serious enough to go to court. ongoing issues that the lawyers are trying to work through with the government of the United States. And as crazy as it sounds, let me just say this. There's also a climate where there are Christians, some of them very sincere, who are so concerned that there's this group, these Christians trying to take over and do this and do that. And they're Pentecostal, they're charismatic, and they're going to take over everything. It's a fear-mongering thing that creates an environment that fed into this as well. I'm not giving you more details. That fed into it as well. So friends, I want you to help get this message out. I meant to mention this at the beginning, but I was so focused on talking with my friend Torben and getting this out. But everybody watching on YouTube right now, if you haven't clicked the thumbs up, do that and then share it. Everyone watching on Facebook, click like there and share it. Those that will hear this subsequent to the live broadcast on podcast, share it with your friend. Tell everybody you've got to tune in and listen to this. Everybody listening live on radio, when the show is over, tell your friends about this. This is real life. You know, I remember, Torben, once I was ministering in Korea, and I was speaking 25 times in 1 week. And at the end of the first morning sessions, I said to everyone, the Lord's speaking to some of you. Skip lunch. You need to fast and pray for a breakthrough. And I heard the Lord say to me, what a wonderful idea. And I thought, I said, no, Lord, that was for everybody else. That was for everybody else because I have to minister day and night. It's like, no, that's a great idea. You skip lunch as well. So here you come, and irony of ironies, America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, the land of opportunities, the land where people come from around the world for religious asylum and freedom from tyrannical governments and all of that. And you come here, and you end up going through something utterly unique, 412 days in prison. He's out of prison now. Pray for justice. Pray for the truth to come to light. When we come back, let's talk about what Jesus did in Torben's life in prison for those 412 days. We'll be right back.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Tribeta Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife Betty host the Life Today television program. Now here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss for some foolish reason a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we've got just a few minutes left with Torben Sundergaard. Again, we will be deleting waves of false attacks coming against our brother. It's just the nature of being on the front lines. But when you stir things up, I've talked to you about wanting to be dangerous to the kingdom of darkness and on Satan's hit list in that regard, that the enemy knows who I am and what I'm doing. And the more I get falsely accused and attacked and lied about, the more encouraging it is, hey, we're making a difference. Not because we're obnoxious, not because we're foolhardy, not because we're self-righteous, not because we're hypocritical, but because we're on the front lines, there will be opposition. So Torben separated from his family all this time is very difficult for everyone, as you can imagine. Please pray for the entire family. Pray for justice in these court cases. Pray for the truth to come to light. And may each of you be strengthened as you stand on the front lines, because often the hardest thing is not being in public ministry. It's just living for Jesus day by day in the workplace, in your neighborhood, in the schools. Many times that's the most difficult, when you're just rejected by friends or peers or put out. May God give you courage to stand. Torben, we've had some great talks, wish there could be more, but we've had some great talks since you came out of prison. What are some of the highlights of what the Lord did in you? You've talked honestly about breaking, obviously the fear, the isolation. When I was arrested in Israel for allegedly starting trouble, and of course nothing, you know, I left after hours with them saying you didn't do anything. But even there, just those hours, even though knowing the worst case scenario is I'm going to spend the night in jail, there's this sudden feeling of powerlessness and you can't communicate with the outside world. So it's just a tiniest glimpse of what you must have gone through. But tell us some of what God did in your life in prison.
Yeah, now that there were seasons, because it was more than a year. I would say the first 10 days of isolation, I the first 3-4 days was trauma. It was shocking. It was really scary. I have nothing, like no phone, no paper, no Bible, nothing. And somebody actually sent me a Bible. And I was like, I've never kissed a Bible like that before. I was hugging it, I was kissing it. I was like, just to be a place without anything, that was special. And then I just started to read the Bible, and I had actually beautiful moments in there. Where I felt like some of the house church people in China. It was very a special moment. Then I was put to the first dorm I was in. That was scary. That was really scary to be around other people, and I was not ready for it. I just want to say I tried persecution before, but how do you prepare for something like that? At that time, I was depressed. I felt I was depressed. I was not doing good. But then God spoke to me. I got a very powerful dream that really spoke a lot to me, and about God's plan in it and God's hand in it, and to start to see, okay, God have a plan and a purpose. And you know, I've read a lot. I study a lot. I read about the Heavenly Man and Brother Young and his some of his books and the house church and persecution in China. But it's one thing to read about it, something else to suddenly be there. And I want to say it's more scary to be there than to read about it. It was hard. Then I did a fast, a long fast, where I lost a lot of weight and really started to, okay, God, I need to focus on you. I need to survive this. You need to do something. And then things start to slowly turn. It was not like overnight, but I was studying the word about persecution and suffering and God's plan, and you see again how suffering is part of our journey, is part of our life, and I studied Paul and saw his heart in it, and how he could live the life he lived and without fear, because I felt fear. I really felt fear. And it started to grow in me slowly, and I started to have moments where I felt a little freedom, but then it disappeared again. A little freedom, then it disappeared. Then at one time, God talked to me about studying the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom. And I actually ended up writing a book. I have a book here, 300 pages, handwritten book.
Wow.
Written on a secure, with security pin like this. This is a small pin I can bend, so I don't hurt anyone.
Uh-huh. Amazing.
Maybe 30 pins. And the more I came in to focus on the kingdom to come, of the return of Christ, of the heavenly Jerusalem and the reward, the more this life felt, this pain felt less painful. And I started to really see that this was part of God blessing me. The Bible says I'm blessed when I'm being persecuted. I'm blessed when they lie all kind of evil against me. And there was moments in there where I actually rejoiced. There was moments where I was like, hallelujah, God, thank you for this. Like, thank you for allowing me to be here right now and take part of this suffering. And it was really beautiful. Then I had a moment of revival in there where God just came. It was very, very special. I was trying to share the gospel. I was trying to get things up running, and it just didn't work. It didn't work. And I was trying again and again and again, but it was like one afternoon I was laying in my cell, and suddenly it became quiet outside. And I went outside, and something was going on. Suddenly the TV was off and everyone was standing in a circle and praying for somebody. I'm like, what is happening here? And it was somebody who had just lost his mom. And it was like, God said, now is your moment, Tom. And I was like, God, I don't want to. I tried, but they don't want to. Now is your moment. So I went down and got someone to interpret for me. And then I started to speak to people. And it was like a changed heaven. And I started to do meeting every day there. And people start to meet God. People start to get dreams, come to my cell, got deliverance. Like one guy, he got a dream, a very bad dream, three times the same morning. And then he came to my cell and got delivered. And from that moment on, he was just worshiping God and every day. And the worship was going to the pipes, to the toilet, to the air conditions. So you can hear worship. Then another guy got baptized set free. Another guy got baptized set free. Another guy. And every time somebody got born again, we took them down and shared the testimony for everyone in the dorm. And then we started to do Bible study groups. And out of 25 people in my dorm, there was 22 who joined Bible studies every day.
Praise God.
I had three disciples who got born again. I baptized water, Holy Spirit, and I discipled them. I did not speak Spanish, so I discipled them during the day. And then they did Bible study groups in Spanish with a teacher in the afternoon. And just one story, there was one guy, one of my strongest disciples, he beautiful, beautiful baptism, pouring water over his head. That was what we could do, lay hands on him. Then he went in and took a shower, got filled with the Holy Spirit. And he was very strong. 2 months later, he was in a discussion with the ice officer, and he was put in the box. He was taken to holding. And that is hard to be there. And he was there for a week. And I was thinking, oh no, what now? I don't hope he's lose his faith in all of this.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I met him a few weeks later when we were outside one day at rec, and I saw him, and he came, I was like, hey, Barker, how are you? And he came running to me. Tom, it's so amazing. I'm just like you now. I'm sitting in my cell. I don't see TV anymore. I'm praying. I'm reading the Bible. I'm starting a Bible discovery group in my cell, and the first disciple getting baptized tonight.
Praise God.
And it was so beautiful. Later, another guy came to me from another dorm who got transferred over to me, and I asked him, hey, what, are you a Christian? And he started to say, yeah, In our dorm, we are actually doing Bible discovery groups. There is a missionary one place in this jail who are done teaching, is being copied and doing in different places. And I Amazing. Said, this is me. And he was like, this is you. So I know at least of three dorms where they're doing Bible discovery group, Bible studies, and people got born again and set free. And it was powerful. And I want to say the most powerful communion I ever had was there on the prison floor. The most powerful baptism I ever had was in there. And some of the most powerful studies I've had was in there, because, you know, most of the New Testament is written in prison. So when you read it in prison, it just, the context just make it more deep in a way where yeah. you read the words and like, whoa, I understand. Yeah. I understand. So I want to say I learned a lot. I learned so much. And today, I'm thankful I was not out after a month or two, because then I would come out full of fear, full of anxiety, and say to everyone out there, stop what you're doing, be afraid.
Yeah.
But instead, I can come out and say, there's something we need to learn at the body, because
come on,
most people are not ready for it. I was not ready for it. I'm come not on. Like, and I'll say that was the greatest and the thing. And another thing is, and I want to repent there public, because, you really feel alone. And I think that feeling of being so alone, that was really hard. And I did not understand why the body was so quiet. And you, Dr. Brown, I always love you. You said something. But many people did not say anything. And I really understand we need each other.
Yeah.
And I need the body more than I have been showing. And I want to repent there. And
my brother,
and we need to love each other.
And my brother, that's where we have to end with those words.
Yeah.
Spread this